American Muslim 360.
Talk Unchained.
What exactly is Talk Unchained?
It's going to be a mix of business and economics, politics, education, a little bit of international affairs. Talk Unchained. What I try to do is I try to be very informative and a little bit provocative at the same time.
Talk Unchained with Marlon Aldridge.
It's going to be something that's going to blow your mind, man, because I like to dig real deep, that research piece, and then just shock and awe, man. That's my style, the shock and awe. Talk Unchained.
Talk Unchained with Marlon Aldridge every Monday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m.
Good evening to our audience on American Muslim 360 on Blog Talk Radio, and welcome to Talk Unchained. I'm your host, Marlon Aldridge. Today we discuss American declarative decrees of the natural rights of man, followed by the history of discriminatory U.S. immigration policy. The call-in number is 515-605-9891. Again, that's 515-605-9891. If you have questions, press 1 to get in the queue. Please, no speaker phones or listening to the show on another medium, as this may present feedback in the podcast. Well, if you listen to the news as I do, you know that immigration is a major concern, especially if you are a Trump supporter and if you are Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, who is our current Attorney General of the United States. And did you hear what the Attorney General is doing to halt so-called illegal immigration? He's using, at least in my mind, slave-era tactics by stripping immigrant children away from their mothers. And his Homeland Security Chief Kirchen Michelle Nielsen claimed that it is no different than social services agencies who take children away from their parents because they are breaking the law. Wow. Now, that comparison may sound fair on the surface, but they are totally two different things. Now, Sessions went on to say, listen to this, that a pathway to citizenship for illegal immigrants undermines the rule of law, that the inflow of guest workers and immigrants depresses wages and raises unemployment for United States citizens, and that current immigration policy expands an underclass dependent on the welfare state. Now, aren't those conservative talking points, at least since the 60s? We've heard these phrases before. Now, here's what amazes me. Why does a jurist make use of abstractions like a pathway to citizenship for illegal immigrants undermines the rule of law, and then proceeds to economic arguments that the inflow of guest workers and immigrants depresses wages and raises unemployment for the United States citizens, and that current immigration policy expands an underclass dependent on the welfare state? Why does he not refer to the U.S. Constitution? Now, keep in mind, this is the head law enforcement official in the country. He's a lawyer. He's a trained lawyer, but he makes no mention of the Constitution. He's a former politician, too, former senator from Alabama. Now, we know the history of the South, and, of course, we know the history of Alabama. Now let's hear from a real jurist, Andrew Napolitano. Watch this now, a mainstay on Fox News. But his legal arguments, at least in my opinion, are no joke. So I'm going to be reading from an article he wrote in 2015. As a matter of fact, September 3rd, 2015, entitled Immigration and the Constitution. Here's what he says. He says, "The Constitution does not delegate to the federal government power over immigration, only over naturalization. The tone of the debate over the nation's immigration laws has taken an ugly turn as some office seekers offer solutions to problems that don't exist. The natural rights of all persons consist of areas of human behavior for which we do not need and will not accept the need for a government permission slip. We all expect that the government will leave us alone when we think, speak, publish, work up, worship, defend ourselves, enter our homes, choose our mates, or travel. The list of natural rights is endless. We expect this because we as Americans, we expect this not because we are Americans, but because we are persons, and these rights are integral to our nature. Thus the term naturalization. We expect this in America because the Constitution was written to restrain the government from interfering with natural rights. When these first principles are violated to advance a political cause or to quell public fear, those whose rights are violated because of an immutable characteristic of birth, not because of personal culpability, become the victims of ugly public indifference or official government repression." Now, keep in mind, this is a person who is a mainstay and former federal judge on Fox News, which is the state media channel for the Trump administration. "The American history of government treatment of Africans and their offspring and the European history of government treatment of the Jewish people are poignant and terrible examples of this. Today, the potential victims of public indifference and government repression are Hispanics in America. Hispanics here, without documentation, are being demonized because of the politics of nativism. Nativism, we are exceptional. We are better people than they are. We are here first, or we were here first, is dangerous, is very dangerous, and leads to ugly results." And that's what we have going on in this country, nativism or nationalism. "The Declaration of Independence and the Constitution underscore the truism that all persons have the same natural rights, irrespective of where their mothers were when they delivered them. The right to travel is a natural right, even though it was not until 1969 that the Supreme Court recognized it as such. The court protects natural rights by imposing a very high bar for the government to meet before it can interfere with them absent due process. The high bar is called strict scrutiny. It requires that the government demonstrate an articulated area of jurisdiction and a compelling state interest served by the least restrictive alternative before it can treat a person differently or uniquely because of his or her place of birth. A compelling state interest is one that is necessary to preserve life or the state's existence, and it must be addressed using the least force and causing the least interference with personal liberty possible." I want to say that again. It must be addressed using the least force and causing the least interference with personal liberty possible. I want you to contrast that to stripping children away from their mothers and basically putting these people in concentration camps. This is what's going on. He continues, "This test was written so as to give the government wiggle room in a crisis and to make it in intentionally difficult, nearly impossible, to write laws that apply only to discrete groups when membership in them is determined by birth. But the Constitution itself, from which all federal powers derive, does not delegate to the federal government power over immigration, only naturalization. Thus, when the government's motivation for enacting immigration laws is to further genuine, compelling foreign policy goals, the laws will be upheld. But when the government's motivation is nativism or fear or hatred or favoritism, strict scrutiny will operate to defeat those laws. Shortly after the first federal immigration statute was enacted in the 1800s, the Chinese Exclusion Act, the Supreme Court ruled that aliens, whether here legally or illegally, are persons, and the Constitution protects all persons from governmental deprivation of life, liberty, and property without due process. In the same era, the court held that all babies born here of alien mothers are citizens. Let me say that one again. In the same era, the court, and this is the 1800s now, the late 1800s, in the same era, the court held that all babies born here of alien mothers are citizens. The 14th Amendment requires this, and its language is inclusive. All persons born are naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. Though written to protect former slaves, its language is not limited to them. I want to stop here and say an aside. The treatment of African Americans, the resulting turmoil that came from that, in the enactment of legislation, i.e. the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, and the subsequent civil rights legislation has led to benefits for every minority person in the United States. I want the audience to keep that in mind. We thought that these laws were for us, but they ended up being for all minorities, and in many cases, even now, for corporations at all. The corporations have gained much power by use of the 14th Amendment because they are considered persons as well and thus have some of the same rights, not all of the rights, but some of the same rights as each citizen does. Let's finish the article. Some well-intended folks have argued that the language, all persons, doesn't really mean all, because it is modified by and subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. But that language refers to the offspring of mothers who, though here, are still subject to a foreign government, like foreign diplomats, agents, or military. It does not refer to those fleeing foreign governments. It does not and cannot impose an intent requirement upon infants. And that makes sense. They have no intent. As a child or an infant, you can have no intent. That's a mental process. My guess is that nearly all persons reading this are beneficiaries of this clause because you were born here. When the history of our times is written, it might relate that the majority repressed the rights of minorities by demonizing them, using appeals to group prejudice by blaming entire ethnic groups for the criminal behavior of some few members of those groups. That history might reflect that this was done for short-term political gain. If that happens, it will have changed America far more radically and dangerously than any wave of undocumented immigrants did, and that would be profoundly and perhaps irreparably un-American. I want to say this again. This is a Republican who, in my estimation, when I used to look at Fox News, I don't look at it anymore, I didn't see him as a nice person. But here he is at least being honest, and I would imagine so, from a standpoint of jurisprudence, he's a jurist and former federal judge, at least he's making an argument based on the laws of the land. And here you have the attorney general, also a jurist, making abstract arguments and then using as his evidence economic arguments. That doesn't, those two don't fit. But if you understand that he's a politician, and let me add a little bit more information, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. He was named after Jefferson Davis, his first name, Jefferson Davis. Now, for those of us that know our history, know that Jefferson Davis was a traitor to the United States. He was the president of the United Confederate States. Let me say that again. He was a secessionist. He was a traitor. He was the president of the United Confederate States. And this is who this man is named after, and he's in the third generation to carry that name. I just wanted to make sure that the audience understands that. What does the Constitution say about immigration? I wanted to get into that. I'm going to be bringing a lot of source material here, but I want you to think of this, because I understand this mindset. There was something on MSNBC yesterday that had to do with racism. I can't remember the name of it, but they had Joy Reid and a few other people on there. Al Sharpton was there. Some of you may have saw that. I don't really watch that kind of stuff. I tried to. I couldn't stomach it, and I ended up watching something else, because I detect in our consciousness that we are trying, at least in my estimation, somebody tell me if I'm wrong, if there's another way to look at it, but at least black people, in a way, I feel, are claiming moral superiority over whites. And what I mean by that is that our power, at least from my estimation, is about trying to get white people to live up to their so-called moral virtues as represented by their faith, their Christianity, so to speak. And I see all of us doing this. I see the Muslims doing it too, trying to be morally, trying to be, sit from this perch of being more moral than whites, and trying to get them to live up to their so-called professed moral virtues as illustrated in the Declaration of Independence and all of these other types of things, and having these grand goals of treating all men equal, when at the same time we had slavery and we had instituted all of these immigration policies which acted to discriminate against various groups. Now, we're going to go through that timeline, but I just wanted to say that, and of course I'm taking calls. If someone has another way for me to look at that, I'm open to that, but I just wanted to put that out there. So what does the Constitution say about immigration? The United States Constitution, drafted in 1787, did not explain citizenship, but it did mention citizens of the states and citizen of the United States. Citizens of the United States became entitled to the rights guaranteed to them by the Constitution and its later amendments. Among these rights were the right to vote, own property, seek elective office, and to be protected by the laws of the land. Because the young United States followed British common law, it accepted the rule of jus soli, or place of birth. As early as 1790, Congress recognized the rule of jus sanguinis, or blood relationship. I want you to take those in mind. Place of birth, where were you born in the United States, and blood relationship. This was as early as 1790. Congress recognized these concepts. It passed laws giving citizenship to a child born in a foreign country if the father was a citizen of the United States. Now, mention here, if the father was a citizen of the United States. Okay? You know what? I'm absent-minded here. I wanted to make sure, and I can't remember if I said this. I said, I want to make you aware of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Before I go any further, I want to remind you of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. It outlaws discrimination, now watch this, based on race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. I want you to keep those concepts in mind. Race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. We've already mentioned here, to a child born in a foreign country if the father was a citizen of the United States. The father. Okay? The 14th Amendment. The amendment that was intended for slaves. The first official written explanation of American citizenship was included in the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, 1868. Section 1 of this amendment declares that all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. The wording of this amendment places national citizenship before state citizenship. In other words, an American is first a citizen of the United States and then a citizen of the state in which he or she lives. Citizens are entitled to the rights granted by both the national government and their state's government. The 14th Amendment was passed to guarantee citizenship, here we go, to blacks who were freed from slavery after the Civil War. This was the 13th Amendment in 1865. The amendment made the rule of jus soli, I said that before, a law for all U.S. citizens. Jus soli had to do with place of birth. This meant that any child born in the United States becomes a citizen at birth, even if its parents are aliens. However, the rule does not apply to children born to foreign diplomats or United Nations officials. The 14th Amendment does not include jus sanguinis. American citizenship acquired at birth in a foreign nation is usually determined by the law that is in effect at the time the child is born. The Immigration and Nationality Act of 1952, which is amended in 1965, 1976, and 1978, gives the requirements. For a child born on or after December 24, 1952, both parents must have been American citizens. In addition, one parent must have lived in the United States for 10 years and for at least 5 years after the age of 14 before the birth of the child. What about U.S. citizenship by naturalization? So not only can you become a citizen by birth, you can also become a citizen by naturalization. The United States Constitution gives Congress the power to make naturalization laws for the United States. No state can give citizenship to aliens. We're talking about people born outside of the United States. A person can become a naturalized citizen of the United States individually or as part of a group. Generally, any person who has come into the United States as an immigrant may become a naturalized citizen. To do so, a person must be over 18 years old. He or she must have lived in the United States for 5 years without leaving for more than a total of 30 months and not more than 12 consecutive months throughout that 5-year period. Okay, without leaving for more than a total of 30 months and not more than 12 consecutive months. Okay, so you don't want to be out more than 12 consecutive months if you're looking to become naturalized, in addition to those other requirements that I stated. People who wish to become U.S. citizens must file a petition for naturalization. They must take an examination that shows that they can read, speak, and write simple English. They are also tested to see that they have a fair knowledge of American history, government, and the Constitution. They must be able to prove that they are of good moral character. Two American citizens whom they know well must verify that the applicant will be a good citizen and loyal to the United States. Once an applicant has passed the requirements and examination, he or she may become a U.S. citizen by taking an oath of allegiance. Now, to our Muslim community, these words ought to make sense. Allegiance. Isn't that part something that you learn about in the Quran? I'm reading a book by Mukhtar Muhammad, and he's talking about leadership, the Ummah, and a host of other things. So I'm learning a little about the community or Ummah. I'm learning a little bit, and this word allegiance comes to mind. Group naturalization ceremonies often take place on September 17th, Citizenship Day, September 17th. Naturalized citizens are entitled to all the rights granted to natural-born citizens. I want you to keep in mind we keep using this word natural, okay? We humans live in accord with nature. So this is why they are using this term. We humans live in accord with nature. There is one exception. They may not become president or vice president of the United States. Looking at that, I sort of wish Donald Trump was not a citizen of the United States, but I'm going to leave that alone. Once the backbone of U.S. immigration flows, European immigration to the United States has steadily declined since 1960. I want you to keep this date in mind, 1960, with a small uptick following the end of communism in the 1990s. We're talking about the fall of the Iron Curtain, right? And we're talking about the dissolution of the former Soviet Union. European immigrants numbered 4.8 million in 2014 out of a total immigrant population of 42 million. The share of Europeans among the total U.S. foreign-born population plunged from 75% in 1960 to 11% in 2014. And you can imagine that this is the concern for the nativists. They believe that they are losing their country. Now, prior to the 1960s, most of the immigration was from Europe. Keep that in mind because I'm going to make the connection with what our forefathers did and probably what some of you did in the 1960s. As immigration and also, let me back up, from 75% in 1960 to 11% in 2014, as immigration from Latin America and Asia surged to new prominence after the Immigration Act, watch this, of 1965. Abolished national origin quotas that gave preference to European immigration. Immigration Act of 1965. Of course, there was some civil rights legislation during the same year. The motivations and demographic composition of immigrants have changed over the long history of European migration to the United States. The first wave between the 16th and 18th centuries largely consisted of English-speaking settlers from the British Isles seeking economic opportunity and religious freedom. Let me say that again, religious freedom. I want you to think about what I said to you earlier. Keep that in mind as I read through some of this. Considering the high cost of crossing the Atlantic, Europeans arriving in this era were a mix of well-to-do individuals and indentured servants. I want to say that again, indentured servants. They were indentured servants because they had to pay for their transportation to the Americas, and indentured servitude for 7 years was normally payment for that travel to the United States, the Transportation Act. Look it up. Now, this is something that Britain did. From the 1840s to 1850s, the second wave witnessed the arrival of immigrants from Ireland, Germany, and Scandinavia, escaping famine, religious persecution, and political conflicts. Compared to first wave Protestant settlers, ooh, that's signifying religion again, right? The new arrivals were overwhelmingly Catholic. Compared to first wave Protestant settlers, the new arrivals were overwhelmingly Catholic, came from much poorer backgrounds, and were more likely to be young and unskilled. Following this boom, immigration or European immigration migration to the United States mostly paused during the civil rights. Some of this I have to repeat now. This is my professorship coming out here. I want to repeat because I want you to have this in your mind, because what I'm going to say preceding this, I want to make the connection. The new arrivals were overwhelmingly Catholic. Okay? I want you to keep that in mind. And more than 20 million immigrants arrived in the third wave. Now, this was 1880 to 1914. 1880 to 1914. The new immigrants, primarily from Southern and Eastern Europe, were of different linguistic and religious backgrounds than earlier European arrivals. Let me tell you what they're talking about. Southern Europe, those are mostly Catholics. Eastern Europe, mostly Jews. In Eastern Europe, when you think Eastern Europe, I want you to think of the former Soviet Union and now Russia. Many of the countries in Eastern Europe were part of the former Soviet Union. Okay? I also want you to think like this. Remember the Holy Roman Empire separated. You had Western Europe, you had Eastern Europe. Now, when you think Eastern Christianity, that's where I'm going, and we're talking about religion, I want you to think Constantinople, which is in Turkey. You had a break-off of the two. And you can see now what it says here. These people consider themselves different ethnic groups, and their cultures are correspondingly different. Okay? Most Southern Europeans were motivated by economic opportunity in the United States, while Eastern Europeans, primarily Jews, as I've already said, sought protection from religious persecution. European immigration was slowed first by the outbreak of World War I in 1914. Okay, think World War I. Just a little bit of history. We know that you had the Ottoman Empire was involved in that. We had the Russian Empire involved in that. And, of course, we had the West that was involved in that, too. These were all European countries vying for dominion. Okay? and really vying for land. And this war is going to play prominent in what happened in World War II with the rise of Adolf Hitler. I'm going to come back to that shortly. Then by restrictive national origin quotas established by the Immigration Act of 1924, which privileged individuals from Western and Northern Europe. Okay, we're talking about Western Europe. What are we talking about? We must be talking about Protestants. Remember, in the Middle Ages, in the 1400s thereabout, we had the Protestant Reformation. We had the end of the Holy Roman Empire, and basically Christianity split. We had Catholics, and then we had Protestant the religions. One of the seminal personalities in the Protestant Reformation was a German by the name of Martin Luther. I just want to say that. Of course, we had Calvinism as well. Individuals from Western and Northern Europe, these were the preferred groups, and effectively halted immigration from Southern and Eastern Europe. The most recent wave of European immigration followed the fall of the Iron Curtain in the early 1990s. We've already said that. December 26, 1991, to be exact. And, of course, for those of us that are old enough, we remember Ronald Reagan, tear down that wall. He was speaking to Mikhail Gorbachev. When a substantial number of Eastern Europeans moved to the United States, they had rebellion going on all throughout the so-called independent republics that made up Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. Now watch this, to reunite with family members, remember Juris Sanguinis, or sought humanitarian protection. The number of European immigrants in the United States has remained roughly the same since 2000. Of the 55 million European immigrants worldwide, the majority, or 63%, resided in other European countries, with the rest mostly in the United States and Canada. According to mid 2013 estimates by the United Nations Population Division, the majority of European immigrants who have obtained lawful permanent residence in the United States, also known as receiving a green card, have done so as immediate relatives of U.S. citizens or through employment channels. This is another preference, by the way. If you have certain skills, you can get a green card to come work here. Compared to the overall foreign and native-born populations, European immigrants, on average, were significantly older, more educated, and had higher household incomes, though they were less likely to participate in the labor market. That sort of suggests to me that they were coming over here to retire. The United States Immigration Commission. Now, here's where we're about to go into the discrimination. The United States Immigration Commission, known as the Dillingham Commission, was formed in response to growing political concern about immigration in the United States. Under the leadership of Vermont Senator William Paul Dillingham, the Dillingham Commission, which began its work in 1907, had concluded by 1911 that immigration from Southern and Eastern Europe posed a serious threat to American society and culture and should therefore be greatly reduced. Keep in mind, Eastern Europe, we're talking about Jews. Southern Europe, we're talking about Catholics. Okay, so we are discriminating based on religion. So what you see today should not be surprising. History, what do they say, repeats itself, and that there is nothing new under the sun. The commission's overall findings provided the rationale for, watch this, politically and economically inspired immigration restriction acts of the 1920s. Okay, why did I emphasize that? Let's go back to what Jeff Sessions said. His rationale for stripping children away from their mothers as a deterrent and putting so-called illegal immigrants in concentration camps had to do with economic and political motives. So here we see the same thing happening in the early turn of the 20th century. The same thing. And this is probably where he gathered his statements from. I'm pretty sure this is probably where he gathered his rationale from, a scan of history. Including they also had what was referred to as the Emergency Quota Act of 1921, which favored immigration from Northern and Western Europe. These are Protestants, by restricting the annual number of immigrants from any given country to 3% of the total number of people from that country living in the United States in 1910. The movement for immigration restriction that the Dillingham Commission helped to stimulate culminated in the National Origins Formula of 1921, which capped national immigration at 150,000 annually and barred Asian immigration altogether. Now, we're including Arabs and Indians in that. It effectively barred them from immigration to the United States. Okay, let's do a scan. Let's do a timeline here. We've already mentioned in 1907, we talked about the Dillingham Commission, so I'm not going to mention that again. 1921, we had the Emergency Quota Act, is the first to establish discriminatory quotas aimed at preserving the ethnic and racial composition of the United States. The limitations prevented newcomers from each country to the limitations prevented newcomers from each country to 3% of that population in the United States, according to the numbers in the previous census. 1924, Immigration Act / National Origins Act lowered the quota percentage to 2%. Remember, it was 3%. They lowered it to 2% and added provisions to limit total immigration to 150,000 yearly by 1927. Other provisions included using an earlier census to restrict new immigration by ethnicity even further, allow family reunifications, and reducing the number of unskilled workers. The United States also switched to a consular-based immigration system that requires immigrants to obtain an immigration visa from the U.S. consulate. Due to these changes, immigration from Italy fell almost 90%, and some undesirable immigrant populations actually decreased. 1927, percentage quotas end in favor of a proportional system based on the United States population that allowed 150,000 immigrants into the U.S. yearly. This took effect in 1929. This was just as restrictive as the previous system, as undesirable immigrants were still subject to smaller numbers that Western and Northern European immigrants. That's who they favored. 1952, Revised Immigration and Nationality Act continues. National Origins Formula with proportional quotas, but removes racial restrictions. Vetoed by President Truman, overridden by Congress. And that Truman was, for all intents and purposes, a racist, although I will say that he did integrate the U.S. military. It was probably under duress. Okay, here we come forward. 1965, the immigration system as defined by the National Origins Act ends and discriminatory quotas are abolished. Okay, remember in the 60s, we had a host of civil rights legislation enforcing the natural rights of man and the citizenship rights, of course, or the protections for American citizens. Now, I want to pause here because I'm going to say that you can see that when we were active, other minority groups and the United States were able to gain benefits as well. Now, up until 1960, most of the migration was from Europe, regardless of part. They were coming from Europe. And then in the 60s, everything starts to change. Now we have more immigrants from Mexico and Asia. And these groups, we know that Hispanics are now the number one minority in the United States. They have surpassed African Americans as the number one minority. It's important for us to understand that. And this is the point I want to drive home. Would the Immigration Act of 1965 occurred had it not been for the civil rights legislation of 64 and 65? Okay, that's the question. We want to open up the lines, too. I'd like to hear your questions or comments. We're going to take a station break, and then we will return to continue our discussion about the natural rights of man and the history of U.S. immigration policy. Looks like I'm having a little bit of trouble here with the dashboard. And so, well, let's continue until it looks like the dashboard is giving me a little bit of trouble here. So we're gonna keep going. Okay, what do you think? Let's open up the lines. I'd like to hear your questions and comments. What have you been hearing in your particular areas concerning immigration? Are there any difficulties or any concerns or any big issues that are happening in your locales concerning immigration? And also, in addition to that, what are your thoughts on immigration? I'd like to know if you are in agreement with Donald Trump's policies. I know that, well, let me say this. I have a hunch that we have some conservatives in our audience. I'd like to know a couple of things. Do you agree, first of all, with immigration policy? Reform of immigration policy? And number two, would you agree with this statement? The president has the duty per the Constitution to enforce all United States laws. And are they doing the correct thing with, at least in terms of Jeffrey Sessions is the person that I'm thinking about. Is he doing the right thing in terms of stripping children away from their parents and not following? Is he following U.S. law according to what we have determined tonight? Call in numbers, 515-605-9891. Press 1 to get in the queue if you have questions or comments. Let's go ahead and take a quick station break, and we'll be right back.
Stop the music.
The imams are not to control the community. the people, the Quran, the Prophet Muhammad, and the good, sincere support and consensus of the people who follow that, they are to control this community. No imam is supposed to control this community. Have I tried to control this community?
No, sir.
So we're not to control the people. What goes in the community is the majority of the people. If they're supporting, let's go. Is it acceptable in the eyes of God? Is it what Prophet Muhammad approved? Then you should demand it of your people. Even me. Say, Brother Imam, God approves this. It is acceptable in the light of Quran, in the light of the Prophet Muhammad's life. It is acceptable. It is good for us. We need it. We all know we need it. Now, Brother Imam, what right do you have? You should be talking to me this way if I'm the one. Brother Imam, what right do you have to deny us this?
Assalamu alaikum. God's peace be with you. This is Mukhtar Muhammad, Executive Director for the Community-Wide Shura Conference, the parent corporation for American Muslim 360, inviting you to tune in to the next episode of Getting to Know the CWSC this Friday, April 28th, for part two of an important national community presentation on building our national intelligentsia. I look forward to seeing you soon. Assalamu alaikum.
We are back on Talk Unchained, discussing the natural rights of man and the history of U.S. immigration policy. We are at the end of our show. I'd like to take a few calls, but we're going to continue anyway. I hope I'm being very informative and educating you as well on this issue of immigration policy. And we would expect the President of the United States and, of course, his head law enforcement official, Jeff Sessions, to uphold the law as it has written, keeping in mind the natural rights of man. Now, having said that, we know what our so-called founding fathers, what they enumerated in the Declaration of Independence as well as in the Constitution. They had a goal in mind. They had some ideals, correct? The natural rights of man, that man lives in accord with nature, and his certain inalienable rights that he has, these rights endowed by the Creator, right? They are given to us by God Himself. But here we have a human, or at least a group of humans, acting out of their own personal interest, this idea of nativism, which in my mind there's a history to that as well. I mentioned earlier World War I and how and what it was about. It was about Europe basically in turmoil, and everybody else was just a part of it. And with World War I, that was the continuation of what happened, if you're familiar with the Berlin Conference. We're talking about the race for Africa, in which Europe decided how it would split up the African continent. Now, why was this important? We have to understand that Europe is a puny landmass compared to Africa, South America, in other places like Australia, and of course, North America as well. It is a puny place, and here you had all of these different ethnic tribes or groups, all of these various kingdoms in Europe, constantly fighting. There's been no time in history in which they have not been killing each other. And the Ottoman Turks, the Muslims, had them trapped in Europe. And then Christopher Columbus, in trying to find a way around the Ottoman Turks to get to the Far East, ran into this place called America. And it was on. From there, the race was on, particularly up into after the Middle Ages. We're talking about a time period in which Europe had very little advancement because of what I have just intimated. The Muslims basically had them trapped there in Europe, killing each other because it was a puny landmass. Now, what do I mean by that? Let's consider Africa. I'm going to tie all of this together. Now, this is relevant in terms of the discriminatory practices that have to do with immigration. They were killing each other because there wasn't that much land. Now, let's move forward from World War I to World War II. If you are familiar with Adolf Hitler, and I'm sure you are, he wrote a book called Mein Kampf, and in this book he intimated that for the survival of the German people, he wanted to take over basically all of Europe. He started, of course, with Eastern Europe, because which was part of, remember now, this was part of what in that time would have been referred to, as Russia. Yes, the Russian Empire. I'm trying to remember when the Bolshevik Revolution came about. That may have been at the end of World War II. I'm not quite sure about that on my dates there. But my point is that Adolf Hitler, for the survival, according to him, the survival of the German people, he needed to acquire more land. Now, that makes sense given the history of the Roman Empire, the Greeks, and so forth and so on. We're always in this empire-building stage of going out and acquiring other lands. And so Eastern Europe, all of those countries he invaded, and with one of the most powerful militaries in the world, his goal was to exterminate anyone who was non-Aryan. We're talking about Jews, we're talking about Poles, we're talking about Gypsies, we're talking about Roma peoples. And eventually he wanted to take over the whole world, but in particular he wanted to start with those particular area. Defeated France, defeated Britain, if it had not been for the United States, he would have basically wiped them out as well. But here we come forward, though, and we see this continuation of discrimination from people from certain parts of the world. This country was meant to be a Protestant country. It wasn't meant to be Catholic. And I think even still, Catholicism is the number one religion in the United States. So they failed at that. Okay, we also have to consider as well discrimination. We saw earlier we had discrimination against certain nationalities. We talked about Asians. We talked about Arabs. We talked about Irish. Discrimination against certain peoples from different parts of the world. So now we come forward because of our ancestors and the civil rights struggle. We see that in our Constitution, most of the rights that our forefathers fought and died for, as articulated in the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments and in the civil rights legislation, applies to everyone. And we see that even with the immigration policies of the 1960s. And so now the predominant groups, because of all of the discrimination, the past discrimination, we see now Asians, mainly Asians, and Hispanics as the number one immigrant groups coming into this country. Now, if you look at the census and the projections, both of those groups are going to make gains on African Americans. For the most part, our population is stagnant in the same way that the European American population is stagnant as well. So we're going to lose ground as well. So it'd be interesting to know what some of you think in terms of the immigration policy, Trump's immigration policy. Do you agree with it or do you not agree with it? I myself have no problem with it because I believe in the natural rights of man, and I'm sort of stoic from the standpoint that I don't worry about what other people are doing just as long as you allow me to do what I want to do and do not interfere with my natural rights. That's where I want to stand on that issue. Of course, we'll continue this again, I'm sure, in the future. I'd like to thank you for listening to the show. If you'd like to listen to past episodes of Talk Unchained, visit blogtalkradio.com/AmericanMuslim360 and search for Talk Unchained or Marlon Aldridge among the on-demand episodes or in the search box near the top of the webpage. I'd like you to tune in to more informative, thought-provoking broadcasts on AM360 tomorrow morning starting at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time for Critical Issues with Solutions, Money Sense, and A New Day for El Islam. This is Marlon Aldridge. I welcome you back next Wednesday and each and every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Spread the word about the show and follow me on Facebook. Until next time, peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum.